You are listening to The Point from MC3 in Lewistown, Pennsylvania. Check us out on the web at mc3church.org or find us on Facebook at mc3church. MC3, it's like nothing you'd expect.
You're playing like Betty White out there.
That's not what your girlfriend said.
Baby. Whoa, whoa,
whoa. Mommy.
Eat a Snickers. Better?
Better.
Hi.
How about that?
That hurt.
You're not you when you're hungry. Snickers satisfied.
And there's your beautiful baby.
Any day now.
Really? You're eating Doritos? He's eating Doritos on my ultrasound. What I have to do.
I know.
Ow! Give me that.
When we asked Reebok to send us Terry Tate, some people thought we were crazy. But I'm a firm believer in paradigm breaking, outside the box thinking.
Hey, buddy.
Week was over 15 minutes ago, Mick!
And since Terry's been with us, our productivity has gone up 46%.
You know you need a cover sheet on your TPS reports, Richard! That ain't new, baby!
Hey, Terry.
Hey, Janice!
Meeting Mick.
But what's really impressed me is how Terry's become part of the Felcher family.
Yeah, baby.
He fits right in here.
That's a load, Mr. Paul, Doug!
To be honest, I wish Reebok sent us 10 Terry Tates.
You want to play game scene? Well, when it's game time, it's pay time, baby! Whoa!
All right. Whoa. Man, I'm loud. All right, hopefully you enjoyed those. those are a couple funny ones I found from back in the day to start out this morning. So the reason I start with a couple commercials, and you probably have already discovered them, there are some Snickers laying around. I do apologize. I did not think about if anybody has peanut allergies. I am sorry. Hopefully I don't get in trouble for that. But you can help yourselves to a Snickers that's around you at any point. let me ask you, did watching those commercials actually make anybody hungry for a Snickers or Doritos? Okay, see. So that's kind of the reason I started with this morning. Here's the thing with commercials. We all like most of us don't really care for them, right? Like, you're in the middle of watching a good show, a movie, football game, something like that. It's like, commercials come on, all right, time to get up, go to the bathroom, or get something to eat, whatever. You just think, I don't like them, they don't affect me anyways. Until you watch, let's say, a certain sub-commercial. And then all of a sudden I'm saying to Hannah, hey, what do you think about getting Jersey Mike's for supper? But it's crazy, though, because they do affect your thinking sometimes. Whether you like to admit it or not, they might influence your thinking or decision-making. It might actually make you want to get something. That's the whole point of a commercial, right? Is to kind of get you interested in what they're trying to sell you a lot of times. So we're going to back up here for a few seconds to 2022. And by the way, I'm going to try really hard to stay here today, because what I'm about to tell you, this is why I'm going to try and sit here. So back in 2022, we did our first Wise Up series, and I actually talked about Proverbs 27:17, as iron sharpens iron, so friend sharpens another friend. And we talked about the importance of having friends. Well, I watched myself teaching that in 2022, and it was awful. I paced the stage so bad, like I could hardly stand to watch myself. So I'm going to try to sit here a little bit more today. but anyways, we talked about the importance of having friends and all the benefits of having friends around you. You know, and there are so many reasons it's good to have friends around you to help you through life. You know, and I talked a little bit about, you know, you got this kind of wider group of friends that maybe you call them friends, but you more of like a high-by, you know, maybe you catch up a little bit if you run into them in a store type of thing. But then you got your friends that you're a little bit closer to, you might occasionally do something with, but maybe don't prioritize. But then you got your closer friends that you spend maybe a lot more time with in life. And these are the friends that are probably going to, you know, listen, the closer your friends are, the more influential they're going to be to you and you to them. Much like a commercial, who you spend your time with, they're going to affect you, and you are going to affect them in how you live. And we're actually going to listen to a little segment later on in the lesson that backs that up even scientifically, a little segment from a podcast from Andy Stanley. But it's pretty cool how just being around people, it truly affects the way you live. And somebody actually said, you know, when it comes to kids, if you look at a kid and the friends that they keep, somebody made the comment that I can tell you how their life's going to turn out in 10 to 20 years from now. Because the friends that they keep matters, right? So, I'm going to start by telling you a little bit about me and my friends over the years. Anybody that knows me knows I love spending time with my friends. And my kids have more or less been the same way. They love getting out. Like, when they got to the point that they could leave and drive and stuff, and Myra's not quite there, but she's close. Doesn't matter. She's a boyfriend, so she gets to leave all the time anyways. But, like, our kids are the same way. Like, they disappear at the first chance they have. And that's not a bad thing. They love hanging out with their friends, being with their friends, right? I was always the same way. When I was little, I grew up here in town up until I was about 11 years old. And then we moved up towards Granville in a place referred to as the Sand Flats, Brandon Lane, right off of Racetrack Road. The house that we moved to was actually right beside this little church called Fairview Bible Church. I don't know if you're familiar with it. But when I moved, obviously that meant I had to give up the friends that I had developed here in town. I wasn't going to be, you know, I'm not driving. It's not like I can drive back and see them. So I wasn't too excited about moving. I had to move to this new area, gain this new group of friends. And I didn't like giving up the friends that I had. So I wasn't too excited. But I got up there and it didn't take too long. I mean, shocker. It's not like I'm the most shy person in the world. It didn't take long to find some new friends. I found all the guys in my neighborhood that were right around my age. And quickly we became pretty good friends. And we would hang out every day. We're playing basketball, football, baseball, you name it. Summertime, we're probably taking long bike rides or hitting the river to swim or tube or something like that. But anyways, while we're living there, I also have a bunch of friends that I'm developing, you know, getting a pretty close group of friends at school and stuff like this. And so while we're living there, the deacons at this church in the neighborhood would occasionally walk around and just knock on doors. And mind you, up to this point, my parents weren't going to church. Now, I'm going to back up just briefly. When I was about 4 years prior to this, when I did live in town, whenever I had some friends that would invite me to church, I would always jump on the opportunity. I remember when I was younger asking my dad about God and heaven and asking questions. Like, I was curious, right? And, you know, looking back, this is the Holy Spirit. No, I know now this is the Holy Spirit working my life. But every time I had the opportunity, I would ask my dad, hey, so-and-so asked me to go to church. Can I go? And usually wasn't a problem. One particular summer, I got invited to a vacation Bible school. So I went to this vacation Bible school, and at the end of the week, it was Friday, the last day of the week, we were hopping on the bus to come home, and right before this, they had just given a salvation message. And the assistant pastor at the time stepped up to one of the bus and said, listen, before y'all go, you know, in light of what you just heard, would anybody like to come out and pray with me? And I'm like, I didn't hesitate. Like, yeah, I totally want this thing. Like, I want to go to heaven. I want my sins forgiven. So I went out and I prayed with this pastor. And that's the day I gave my life to Christ and decided I was going to start following him. But the thing is, from that point until we had moved, you know, sometime later, like I said, my parents didn't go to church. There was really very little growth at that point. Occasionally, you know, over those years, it might have been a couple times. My friends asked me to go, but there was no regular connection there for me to grow. And so fast forward now back to this point. After a few visits from the deacons, eventually they kind of talked my dad into going to church to check it out. So him and my stepmother at the time decided to go. And at first, they're like, do you want to go? No, not really. Okay. Because my interest had kind of waned at this point. And so they started going. And, you know, the years go on here. I'm getting probably 13, 14 years old now. Starting to really develop some pretty strong friendships with some people at school. You know, heading on to, you know, move on. I'm about 15 now. It gets to the point where right around 13, 14 years old, they start making me go to Sunday morning church. Okay, I wasn't too excited at first, but I started going. And then sometime later, probably within that next year, they started making me go. I can't remember what was first, either Sunday evening service or Wednesday evening, which was a youth group. And Carla's sitting over here. She's probably going to smile a little bit because she knows that as I tell this story, she was there for part of the story. You're going to like it when I get going here a little bit. Probably remember this day, too. So, you know, eventually my dad starts making me go Sunday evening. I'm not too excited about this because now you're getting into my friend time, right? Like, this is the time we're all hanging out doing stuff. Like, I'm not too excited about giving that up. And then it gets worse. I have to go Wednesday evenings, too, and I have to go to youth group. And so I have to start going on Wednesdays. And at this point now, as I'm getting older, I'm probably pushing 15 years old at this point, and I'm really starting to resist this because now you're taking my time from me that I really want it. And, you know, so I start going to Wednesday nights. And this church that we went to was a little more traditional. Were more like if it wasn't a song in the hymn book, there wasn't a whole lot of music they were too excited about you listening to, and especially secular music. And so I remember one night at youth, it's a little single wide trailer that was detached from the actual church. And we're meeting in there, and the youth leader starts talking about music. I'm really curious if Carla remembers this. So I was not happy. I stormed out of youth that night. I walked across my house, like I said, was right beside the church. Stormed across my yard, went up into my bedroom, and my bedroom just happened to face the trailer. I opened up do you remember this, Carla? I opened up my window, and I grabbed my radio, and I put it up in that window, and I started blasting. I think it was Guns N' Roses or something. Blasting it down towards the trailer. I heard about it later on. I got in a little trouble. Anyways, but here's the thing. Even though I was reluctant at first, thanks to a very patient youth leader and some very good friends, to include Carla and several others that are friends of mine to this day, that were patient with me and developed friendships with me. See, what I didn't realize is at the time I'm starting to develop these friendships. All the while, I had this really close group that I'm starting to hang out with. And like I said, I'm 15. I got friends now that are starting to drive. And this group of friends, man, every weekend, Friday night, you can guarantee it, sometimes Saturday, Sundays even occasionally, we were always out and about. We were hopping in so-and-so's car, driving across the county, going to different houses, parties, going to stores and acting like idiots and stuff, like just stuff that teenage kids. I did. You all shouldn't be doing some of the stuff we did. But, you know, and sometimes the things we did, you know, we weren't making the best decisions all the time. Now, this is a group of friends, mind you, that none of them went to church. They were not friends that encouraged my growth, okay? But at this point in my life, this was my close-knit group of friends. They were the ones that probably affected me the most, right? But, like I said, in the meantime, I'm starting to develop some friendships at youth group, at church. And so let's fast forward now to where I'm 16 years old the next year, and I have my license. I'm out driving a few of my friends around. I have my dad's blue 1977 Ford pickup. You remember these old vehicles where, okay, you start here and you go to here, and then it starts turning, and then back here, and then it starts turning? Some of you know what I'm talking about. There's so much play in that steering wheel. Anyways, so I'm driving around. It was a Friday night, late in October. It was after a football game. We'd watched a game up here at Mitchell Field. And afterwards, we went out and we're riding around in my dad's truck. And about two blocks from here, straight across from the Giant there, if you go up that street, that's South Brown Street. On the 400 block of South Brown Street, see, what we decided to do, Bill, what did all teenagers do at that age, at that time of year? Come on, Bill, you know. Or Halloween. Bill, Halloween in the fall. We're pumpkin smashing. And Chris says, it's a pumpkin smashing. We were pumpkin smashing, right? And so, again, I'm not encouraging this, teenagers. Stop, okay? Don't listen to this. All right, close your ears for a minute. So anyways, we found the mother of all pumpkins over on South Brown Street. It was about a 100-pound pumpkin, and I kid you not, it was bigger around than this table. It was like this tall, sitting on the porch. So I pulled up in the middle of the street, sent my crew out to get it, and it was a team lift. It was so big. So they brought it over, and we're about to put it on the tailgate, and I saw the light flip on, and somebody said, hey, what are you doing? I did what every kid would do at that point. I stepped on the gas and tried to get out of there. In the meanwhile, I look in my rearview mirror, and one of my buddies is shooting through some houses to run away, and I see the other one right behind my tailgate trying to catch up. So I slowed down just a little bit, let him hop in quick, and then took off. Took him home and went home thinking, you know, that was close, right? So I get home, and my wife and a few of my close friends like to pick on me because I have this look sometimes that I give. They call it the Kirk look. And if I'm not happy or I'm frustrated or angry or whatever, I give this look. And I think I can do it right now because I'm not upset. I got home this night, and I got the dad look. And first thing my dad says, Polly knows my dad. She can probably picture how he would handle it. He said, get in here and sit down. Oh, crap. I did not like that tone at all. He is upset. So I go in and I sit down. He says, why are the police looking for my truck? You know, they said his license plate. Why are they looking for a truck owned by Lester Gensel right now? Like, what are you talking? My dad had one of those CV scanners. Shoot. So I knew when I got home, and he told me that I was in a lot of trouble. And so I don't know if this was just, listen, God somehow works things out sometimes that you can't understand, right? And all of a sudden, these two worlds of mine kind of collided. So I have all these friends that I was running around with, hanging out with. And I had all these friends that initially were kind of forced into my life, but I started to develop these good friendships with. And from talking to them, I learned out about a school that most of them went to. And anyways, I kind of thought maybe in my mind I was being a little bit clever, but I think it was God's way of nudging me to make a decision that I needed to make in my life. Because what I realized that day when I got in trouble is I thought back to when I was younger, when I first gave my life to Christ, and I thought, oh, I'm never going to do this stuff. I'm never going to smoke or do this or that and the other thing. And all of a sudden, I realized I'm getting into trouble doing things that I didn't think I was going to do. But then I got these friends over here, and I said to my dad, I said, Dad, I know I messed up. I said, you know, I've been talking to all these guys at church, and I've been learning about the school that they go to, and I think I'd kind of like to go there if I could. It's Mifflin County Christian Academy. It's where I ended up going. And a lot of my kids have gone there. Now you know why I sent my kids there. Because for me, it made a huge impact in my life. But my dad and stepmother at the time came back some time later and said, okay, we're gonna let you go. And that's a sacrifice, mind you. It's not cheap to go there. And a few weeks later, I was going to school there. And at that time in my life, that also meant I wasn't going to have as much time with these friends over here, right? But what happened is I developed stronger friendships and new friendships with more believers at this point in my life that took place of those friends. Now, I still kept trying to stay connected to this for the longest time, to these friends over here. But eventually, my not-so-good friends were being replaced by better friends. And the verse this morning that Cora read as we were singing is Proverbs 13:20. Walk with the wise and become wise, for a companion of fools suffers harm. And much like a commercial can influence you, your friends, and I've already said this, can influence and will influence the way you live your lives and the decisions that you make. So it's important that we consider the type of friends that we keep, and especially the type of friends that we let close in our lives. So the first thing I want to look at this morning is look at who is wise and who is a fool. For starters, who is wise? They get it. Proverbs 4:7 says that the beginning of wisdom is this: get wisdom. I know this is kind of crazy, but for starters, this is what you do if you want to be wise. You get wisdom. That means it's something that can be gained, okay? You don't come out, whether it's natural birth or via a Dorito, you don't come out of the womb wise. It's something that is gained throughout life. So somebody that's wise is going to desire it. They're going to want it. Why? Because it's valuable. And just fair warning, we're going to be flying this morning. Every time I practiced, I was late. So I apologize if I sound like the Micro Machine Man as we get going here. Okay. Why? Because it's valuable. Proverbs 8:11. For wisdom is more precious than rubies, and nothing you desire can compare with her. Wisdom is more valuable than anything you can desire, it says. Money, possessions, people for that matter. It's worth attaining. because it comes from God. Proverbs 2:6, for the Lord gives wisdom. From his mouth come knowledge and understanding. And in James 1:5, it says, if any of you lacks wisdom, you should ask God, who gives generously to all without finding fault, and it will be given to you. Again, it comes from God, and it can be gotten. Okay? You just need to ask. And it begins, somebody who's wise, wisdom begins by respecting God. Proverbs 1:7 says, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. And in 9:10, it says, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, and knowledge of the Holy One is understanding. See, the day that I showed up, after smashing that pumpkin, or trying to anyways, and walked into my house, see, there was a healthy fear in my life at that point. I feared how my dad was going to deal with me because, you know, or what, how, like what he was going to think, because I knew I had done something wrong. There's a healthy fear of that should actually drive us to want to do the right thing. My fear came a little later because I made the wrong decision. All right, but it's this, you know, when it comes to fearing God or respecting God, it's understanding that He is God and that what He says is worth listening to. And we should have that healthy fear of Him in our lives. And it continues, wisdom continues by respecting wise people. Proverbs 13:10 says, but wisdom is found in those who take advice. The understanding here is that clearly that's somebody that's giving good advice, because wisdom and foolishness are the complete opposite. As we continue on here, we're going to see that in a few minutes. But it continues by respecting wise people. With wisdom, it comes with humility. When pride comes, then comes disgrace, but with humility comes wisdom. And the other thing about wisdom is it's a protection. Ecclesiastes 7:12 says that wisdom is a shelter, as money is a shelter. But the advantage of knowledge is this: wisdom preserves those who have it. So it says, you know, wisdom and money both are like a shelter, right? Like you could use your money to literally go buy a house or anything else for that matter that you feel you could surround yourself with to make you feel more secure in life or whatever. But the reality is wisdom is the thing that's going to help you make the right decisions that literally can preserve your life. Okay? It's far more valuable, as we said in the second point, than rubies, than anything else that you could desire. And it's so much more. James 3:17 says, but wisdom that comes from heaven is first of all pure, then peace-loving, considerate, submissive, full of mercy and good fruit. You can find good fruit in Galatians chapter 5, 22, 23, I think, somewhere around there. Impartial and sincere. All right, so we've looked a little bit about, and we looked at what wisdom is. Now let's look at somebody who is a fool. And you're going to see a pattern here real quick. For starters, they can't get it. Job 11:12 in the NLT. Everything else, by the way, is in NIV. An empty-headed person won't become wise any more than a wild donkey can bear a human child. Who here works in the medical field? Can a donkey bear a human child? Anybody? Jack says, yeah. Well, that's Jack. He's not a nurse or doctor. All right. No, we know. That's obvious, right? It can't. A donkey cannot bear a human child. In the same way, it says that an empty-headed person or fool cannot be wise. All right? Somebody who is a fool in their own eyes, you know, we're going to talk about, I don't want to get ahead of myself, but we'll talk about pride and earthly wisdom here in a minute. They might think they're wise in their own eyes, but they aren't. They cannot be wise. Why? Because it's too much. Proverbs 24:7 says that wisdom is too high for fools. It's not something that they can attain. Because it is not from God. James 3:14 through 16, and this is kind of what I was referring to here. But if you are bitterly jealous and there is selfish ambition in your heart, don't cover up the truth with boasting and lying. For jealousy and selfishness are not God's kind of wisdom. Such things are earthly, unspiritual, and demonic. For wherever there is jealousy and selfish ambition, there you will find disorder and evil of every kind. See, this kind of wisdom, the wisdom that is, that you know, somebody that has jealousy and selfishness and are constantly boasting and lying, this comes from an earthly kind of wisdom to where they think they've got it all figured out. Okay? This isn't from God. Wisdom that's from God is, you know, we've already talked about all the things that it is. Foolishness also, it begins by not respecting God. Psalm 14:1 says, only fools say in their hearts that there is no God. It says the same in Psalm 53:1. Somebody who is a fool from the get-go is, you know, is not going to acknowledge God as God, which means they're not going to listen to what he has to say or believe what he says as far as how we ought to live. They live on their own way of thinking, their own kind of earthly demonic wisdom that we just talked about. Like, to live outside of God's understanding that God is and that he is the one who is in control, like, that's what foolishness is. It's the belief that you can figure it out on your own, that you don't need him. It continues by ignoring wise people. Proverbs 15:5 says, only a fool despises a parent's discipline, and whoever learns from correction is wise. In verse 14 of the same chapter, a wise person is hungry for knowledge, while the fool feeds on trash. It comes from pride. Again, the exact opposite of wisdom. Foolishness comes from pride. 2 Corinthians 11:17. This is actually Paul talking. Such boasting is not from the Lord, but I'm acting like a fool. And if you're familiar with this passage, this is where Paul basically is talking about why he has every reason to boast, right? And even in this, as he's about to say these things, he says, such boasting is not from the Lord. He says, I'm acting like a fool. Now, he has a point to make, and he's basically saying, I'm going to act like a fool because I need to make a, I'm going to make a point here. But he even acknowledges that this kind of boasting is not from the Lord. Ecclesiastes 5:3 says that too many words make you a fool. So foolishness comes with pride. It is harmful. You know, much like we said, wisdom is a shelter to us. Proverbs 26:1-12. I'm not going to read it all. I'm just going to read verse 10. We don't have time for all of it. But it says, an employer who hires a fool or a bystander is like an archer who shoots at random. You want to talk about how dangerous that can be, how harmful that could be? Could you imagine hiring somebody that you know is not going to be a good worker, who might be dissenting in the way that they communicate and talk around people, that they're just, everything that you get from this person, you know, like, it's literally, maybe it could be a lawsuit waiting to happen. But the idea here is, like, somebody that's a fool, if you knowingly hire that person, it's like just loading up a bow and arrow and just spinning with a blindfold and letting it go. You know, so the idea that it could be quite harmful. Somebody that's foolish can be harmful. And we talk, you know, the main verse today, of course, is walk with the wise and become wise, for a companion of fools suffers harm. We're going to focus more on wise friends today. But here's the reality. If you keep friends around you that are foolish in the way that they live, there's a chance that it can affect you in that way, and it's going to pull you in that direction. You know, so what I want to do, and to finish up here, and so much more, there's too much more to list throughout Proverbs and the rest of the Bible. Listen, if you go throughout Proverbs or any the rest of the Bible for that matter, there are so many things that we could keep going on and on and on about the difference between somebody who's wise and who is a fool. But we only have so much time this morning, so that's kind of where I cut it off this morning. But the first thing I want to look at is, who do you walk with? When it comes to living wisely, if we understand that wisdom comes from fearing God, from respecting God, from understanding that he is God, he's in control, and that he makes the rules, like, then the way we live should reflect that, right? So the first thing I want to look at is, who do your friends walk with, and do they do the things? Do they live a life in a way, you know, in a way that honors God? And so what I'm going to do here is actually go into a passage that's pretty familiar for all of us. It's one of the passages we use to kind of help form who we are here at MC3 and why we do what we do. And it's in Acts chapter 2. And I'm going to start with reading verse 42. It says that they devoted themselves to the apostles' teaching and to fellowship and to the breaking of bread and to prayer. And I'm going to pause here for a second. I'm actually going to read another verse that we kind of use to help get things going here. And it was whenever Jesus was questioned in Matthew 22, and this verse is later on, Luke, so don't worry about jumping to it. Says, somebody asked Jesus, what's the greatest commandment? And he says, love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength. See, that's the first one, but the second one is just like it. Love your neighbor as yourself. And if we love God, if we believe that it is worth listening to the things that he has to say, then we're going to do the things that are important when it comes to living for him. And I believe that, you know, as we're looking at how we do things here, we're trying to figure out what are the most important things as to how we live, how we do church. And we figure that the things that are most important are worshiping God, you know, glorifying him, know, spending time with believers, praying together, serving each other. Like, these seem to be the most basic things that are so important to living a good Christian life. And so the first question I have for you, when it comes to your friends, do they worship God? I think it's important, especially for those that you keep close to you. Do they worship God? Do they go to church at all? And a little bit beyond that, if they go to church, like, is it something like, do they worship outside of church? Or is it just something they do to kind of put on a front? Because listen, if we're going to let somebody close into our life that's going to affect the way we live, I think it's important that they love God too, right? Also in verse 42, we see talks about they devoted themselves to the apostles' teaching and to fellowship. Do your friends spend time with other Christians? Because again, if you're going to spend time with them and the way they live, you know, the people that they're around are going to affect them the same way they can affect you. So are the people that your friends hanging out with good influences for them? Are they interested in hanging out with other believers and fellowshipping together? You know, it's important. Do they pray together? Do your friends, let's say you have something going on in your life that you're struggling with. Can you count on your friends to pray for you? And I'm going to tell you right now, if you don't think prayer makes a difference, I'm going to tell you recently of a time I think it absolutely did. And it's because I had some people very close to me praying for me. So usually, I'm going to walk a little bit. I can't sit here all day. Usually when it's my turn to teach, my first couple days tend to be frustrating because as I'm trying to figure out what I want to teach about and where I want to go, it tends to be a very slow process. I mean, sometimes it'll take the better part of 2 days before I feel like I'm even starting to gain any traction. And for whatever reason, this year, as I was trying to figure out where I wanted to go with this and, you know, come up with an outline, I went into a quiet place to focus on it. And I just kind of started going with it. And within a couple of hours, 2 to 3 hours, I had pretty much my outline done. And I left, and the first thing I did is I called a couple people. I called my wife, and I called a good friend of mine, and I said, you know, because they knew I was going in to prepare. I said, were you praying for me this morning? And in both cases, they said yes. I'm like, well, then that makes sense, because I don't understand. Like, it doesn't usually go this easily. And so I have no doubt that, you know, people praying for me helped me to get through this a little bit easier. And it was kind of refreshing because it can be, those of you, I'm sure like Chris, Justin, you guys, like, this isn't the easiest thing for us that don't do it all the time. So having your friends pray for you is, I mean, that's a big deal, right? Do your friends serve each other? Do they serve you if you need it? You know, if somebody around you, if you have a need that comes up, and listen, we all go through these ups and downs in life, right? Sometimes things are seems like they're going well, but every once in a while, we just have these times. I mean, I still remember this one year where it seemed like everything that we owned broke or stopped working. I mean, it was ridiculous. It was one of these years. We've never had a year like it. It was awful. And I remember getting to the point because I've always been one that likes to be the one helping somebody else. And I remember that we had so many issues this year. And somebody showed up to our door with a box full of meat and stuff. I mean, just basic things that, you know, otherwise we would have no issue going and buying. And I remember just breaking down in tears as somebody handed me that box because they cared enough to serve us in a time of need. And, you know, again, that's tough for me because I like to be on the other side of that. I like to be the one given, right? And, you know, but somebody was there for us when we needed it. And there have been many. I could give you more stories. There have been so many times where we've had friends come through for us. I mean, even just this weekend, Jen came down and helped us weed our yard. It might not seem like a big deal, but like having friends that are there to help you do things, help you through tough times, help you whenever things get tough, like it's nice. It's a good thing to have. And quite frankly, it's biblical, right? These are the kind of friends that we should want to have in our lives. Friends that are going to encourage our growth, that are going to live in a way that would encourage us to live the right way as well. So we've looked at who we walk with. Now let's make it a little bit tougher here. We're literally just going to go through and ask the same questions again. But now, it's who are your friends walking with? And that means basically you. Are you worshiping God? And I know, you're going to be like, well, I'm sitting here, right? Sean's done an entire series about worship that are going to tell you it's, and I don't remember which ones they are. I didn't go back and figure out which ones they were. But, so I apologize there. But worship is not limited to just showing up here on Sunday morning. Worship is not just singing a song or listening to somebody teach. Worship is a lifestyle. It's the constant recognition that God is God and you want to glorify Him in how you live. It's 24/7, 365. Everything that you do can be worship. It's all about your heart and how you do it. The way you work can be worship if you're working for Him and not for men, right? The way that you treat your family, the way that you treat your friends. Okay, we're talking about friends this morning. The way that you drive down the road, and that's a tough one for me. Anybody that knows me knows that I get a little impatient when I drive sometimes. But everything that you do can be worship if it's done with the right attitude. If everything you do, what's the saying, Corinthians, whether we eat or drink or whatever we do, do it all to the glory of God. If you try to do everything that you do to His glory, then it's worship. So the questions again. So the first one was, are you worshiping God? Are you fellowshipping with the believers? Okay, it's one thing to show up here. Sean talked about, actually, a lot of these things that we're talking about here right now, Sean talked about in our last series, right? The You on Fire series. Do you show up at the last minute, sneak in, and then at the very first second, when we're done at the end, you sneak out so that you don't have to talk to anybody? What about outside of church on Sunday morning? Do you go to Prime Group? Are you involved in your Prime Group? Do you jump in whenever we have service opportunities that come up? And we're kind of getting ahead here. We're going to talk about serving here in a minute. But when it comes to doing things with other believers, do you take the opportunity? You want to know who I spend a lot of my time with? If you are in my Prime Group currently, raise your hand. A lot of the hands that you see up right now, more often than not, is who we spend time with. It's not, some more than others, I get it. But like, a lot of us are going on vacation here in a few weeks, right? Prime Group, woohoo! We spend a lot of our time with our Prime Group. I have some other friends that don't go to MC3 these days that I'm still very good friends with, but they are also believers that, they're the kind of friends that will occasionally ask me the tough questions. How are things going? Seriously, how are things going? Or they'll pray for me. I had a brother this morning. The elders pray. We pray for each other as well. But man, I had brother Gene come up to me this morning. He's one of my guys, right? And pulled me aside and prayed for me. And you know how much that means. Like having friends like that, that's pretty awesome. To know that you have people that have your back. But that's the kind of people we should be spending time with. Are you spending time with other believers, or are you hanging out with the people from work all the time who aren't good influence? Yeah, and listen, you can have good friends at work too. Sorry for the example. But you know what I'm saying. Do you hang out with people that maybe aren't a good influence for you? Are you praying together? Do you pray for your friends? So whenever somebody in your Prime Group puts something on the messenger thread or whatever you use to communicate, says, hey, I'm having a tough week. My dog died. My aunt is struggling right now with whatever illness or whatever it is. And, work sucks right now. Whenever they start, whenever they say, hey, we got all this stuff going on, are you one that just types in prayers and puts the little folding hands? Or are you actually praying for them? And I know, again, of course I do. Well, I don't know. Because I can tell you in the past, I was guilty of this. I've done it where I just punched it in. And then I realized, I can't. Because what happens, I have learned that so that I am not, I don't do that. If I type it now, it means I've already prayed for you. Or I am praying as I type it. Because what I've done in the past is I type it and then I'd be like, I just realized I forgot to pray. My intent was there, right? I wanted to pray and then I realized later that I didn't. But do you pray for your friends? And then next, Are you serving each other? Let's say that friend that's going through a difficult time, you know, could really use your help, whether it's fixing something or maybe a little bit of money or some of your time just to be with them or whatever it is. Are you willing to serve those around you when needs come up? Like, I you know, we all have a tendency with all these questions to quickly answer, oh, yeah. But listen, do your actions back up your words? Are you willing to step up and be there for those around you? Are you the kind of friend that your friends need? Are you a wise friend? Are you a friend that tries to live in a way that glorifies God so that you can be a good influence to them? So why does all this matter? I told you that I would give you a little bit of a scientific kind of background to all this and to why the people you're around, it truly does matter. So again, the verse this morning, Proverbs 13:20, walk with the wise and become wise, for a companion of fools suffers harm. Go ahead, Luke.
And Andy, the final key that I've heard you talk about is that we should surround ourselves with on-purpose people.
This is Andy Stanley,
this
by the way.
It's absolutely huge. In fact, if you're listening to this podcast, chances are you listen to other podcasts, which means you're a learner, which means you already get this, whether you understand the science behind it or not. And speaking of science, my assistant, Diane Grant, just sent me an article recently that, again, just bolsters this idea. There's a neuroscientist at Northwestern University named Morin Cerf. I think that's how you pronounce his last name. He's been studying decision-making for over a decade. And his research, this is so fascinating, his research has found that when two people are in each other's company, their brain waves will begin looking nearly identical. Just being in the room together and interacting, something happens in the brain. And here's a quote from the article. He says, the more we study engagement, we see time and time again that just being next to certain people actually aligns your brain with them. Now, think about that. Of course, every parent listening with teenagers, middle schoolers, and high schoolers going, I knew it. I've seen this happen. I didn't know there was science to back it up. But he says there's something that happens in our brains based on the people we're around. So then he goes on to say this, the people you hang out with actually have an impact on your engagement with reality beyond what you can explain. And one of the effects is you become alike. Hmm. So this whole idea that we become like the people we associate with, not only does that happen in our behavior, because that's where we observe it. You know, you started hanging out with him and now you're doing this, now you're doing that. Since you started hanging out with that group of girls, you know, we see it all the time. And so he says, well, there's science to back this up. This is not just behavioral. Something actually happens in our brain. So his conclusion is that if people want to maximize, he talks about happiness. If you want to maximize happiness and minimize stress, that you should build a life that requires fewer decisions by surrounding ourselves with people who embody the traits we prefer. Because over time, we naturally pick these up, whether they are desirable or not. So surrounding ourselves with on-purpose people is actually a strategy. Mm. If we really are about getting to the place where we are willing to take the step, make the sacrifice to do something meaningful with our lives, surrounding ourselves with people who think that way and live that way will encourage us. And he would argue that even neurologically would help move us down that path.
So there's even some science to back it up, right? The people you're around literally will affect the way that you think. It says that just being around other people will cause you to start thinking alike. And so it's super important that the people that you keep close, that they're people that are, he talks about on-purpose kind of people, right? People that want to grow in their lives, in their relationship with Jesus, so that that would affect you in the same way. And again, it's important for you to be a person that wants to grow in that way so that you can be a positive friend, a wise friend to somebody else. Something else about friends in Proverbs 17:17, it says that a friend loves at all times. And if a friend loves at all times, I know we usually use these verses in Corinthians. A lot of times they'll come up at weddings and stuff. But I figure, you know what, if a friend is loving, or if you're going to be a loving friend, then what does that mean? 1 Corinthians 13:4 says through 7, love is patient and kind. It's not jealous or boastful or proud or rude. It does not demand its own way. It's not irritable, and it keeps no record of being wronged. It does not rejoice about injustice, but rejoices when the truth wins out. Love never gives up, never loses faith, is always hopeful, and endures through every circumstance. So I'm going to look at an example of somebody who was a good friend in the Bible. We're going to go through this fairly quick, but this is the story of Ruth. There's another great friendship in the Bible with Jonathan and David, but I believe that that might be a topic coming up here in a few weeks, so I'm going to leave that one alone this morning. So in the book of Ruth, mostly in chapter 1, we'll get a little bit into chapter 2. I'm not going to read it all to you. I'm going to sum a lot of it up. But there's the story of Naomi and her two sons, Naomi and Elimelech. We find out about Elimelech in verse 2, and in verse 3, he's already dead. Okay, so just in the first few verses, we find out that Naomi had a husband named Elimelech. In verse 3, he died. We also find out in verse 3 that Naomi had two sons. I forget their names. They married married a woman named Orpah, and one married a woman named Ruth. And I think it's by verse 4 or 5, both of her sons had died. Okay, so now it's Naomi and her two daughters-in-law. At this point, they go back to Naomi's homeland. And starting in verse 11, it says, Naomi said, "Return home, my daughters. Why would you come with me? Am I going to have any more sons who could become your husbands? Return home, my daughters. I am too old to have another husband. Even if I thought there was still hope for me, even if I had a husband tonight and then gave birth to sons, would you wait until they grew up? Would you remain unmarried for them? No, my daughters, it's more bitter for me than for you because the Lord's hand has turned against me." What we see here is that Ruth loves selflessly. Let's move on to the next verse. And at this they wept aloud again. It says that Orpah kissed her mother-in-law goodbye, but Ruth clung to her. So Ruth loves selflessly. See, she had the chance like Orpah did. Orpah gave her a hug, gave Naomi a hug, and went home and basically, you know, restarted her life at this point. But for whatever reason, Ruth decided that it was the better thing to stay with Naomi at this point. And in this way, Ruth was very selfless in her love towards Naomi. Moving on in verses 14 through 18, it said, "Look," Naomi said, "your sister-in-law is going back to her people and to her gods. Go back with her." But Ruth replied, "Don't urge me to leave you or to turn back from you. Where you go, I will go. And where you stay, I will stay. Your people will be my people and your God my God. Where you die, I will die, and there I will be buried. May the Lord deal with me, be it ever so severely, if even death separates you and me." And then at that point, when Naomi realized that Ruth wasn't going to listen, she just stopped trying. Okay, but Ruth was loyal. Ruth had determined that she didn't need to go back and leave Naomi and look to get married and all this stuff again. She was selfless in her love, and she was loyal. She said, "Listen, I'm sticking this out with you. I'm going to be with you as we go through this." And specifically in verse 16, I'll read it to you again. It says, "Where you go, I will go. Where you stay, I will stay. Your people will be my people, and your God will be my God." So when we were looking earlier, right, at our friends and looking at ourselves, do they worship God? Do they fellowship with believers? Do they pray? Do they serve? We see that Ruth said, "You know what, Naomi, I'm going to stick with you, and I am going to worship your God with you." Okay, so Ruth was a friend who worshiped God. She was somebody who fellowshiped with the believers because, you know, obviously the understanding here is that Naomi was worshiping God. Ruth says, "I'm going to spend my time with you, with your people. We're going to spend our time together, and I'm going to worship God with you." So she was a friend that fellowshiped. And part of the worship process in the Old Testament was they prayed, right, just like we do today. And so it's implied here that she would also be a friend that would pray. And then in chapter 2, we see in verses 2 and 3, we see where Ruth served Naomi. It says, "Ruth the Moabite said to Naomi, 'Let me go to the fields and pick up the leftover grain behind anyone in whose eyes I find favor.' Naomi said to her, 'Go ahead, my daughter.' So she went out, entered a field, and began to glean behind the harvesters." And so understand, we don't know how old exactly Naomi is here, but she's older. And she, you know, the understanding is she said that, you know, I'm too old. I'm not even going to have another husband. I don't know, you know, how old she was, how difficult it was, you know, for her to get around and do the things she needed to do. But either way, what we see here is that as Ruth stuck it out and went through this time in life with her, she served. She went out and picked up the leftover grain and provided for her and served her through this, right? So we see an incredible example of a good friend in Ruth. So who can tell us how to be a wise friend? So how can we figure out what we need to do to become a better friend to somebody else? And of course, the easy answer here, and this is where we're going, is Jesus, right? Jesus showed us how to worship. In John 15, 9 through 11, as the Father has loved me, so I have loved you. Now remain in my love. If you keep my commands, you will remain in my love, just as I have kept the Father's commands and remain in his love. I have told you this so that my joy may be in you and that your joy may be complete. And then he goes on in chapter 15, verse 15, and says, I no longer call you servants because a servant does not know his master's business. Instead, I call you friends, for everything I have learned from my Father, I have made known to you. Like I said, when it comes to worshiping God, it's about believing who he is and what he says and living accordingly. And he says, now if you keep my commands, you will remain in my love, just as I have kept my Father's commands and remain in his love. And then he goes on to say in verse 15, I don't call you servants, you're my friends now, because everything that my Father's made known to me, I've made it known to you. I've equipped you with everything that you need to be able to live a life of worship to God. So Jesus showed us what we needed to do. Keep his commands. Live in a way that honors God, and you will live a life of worship. That's what it's all about. Again, like we said, wisdom starts with fearing God, with understanding that it's about doing, living the way we ought to live for him. Jesus showed us fellowship in John 15, 5 through 11. So this is just a few verses prior. It says, I am the vine and you are the branches. If you remain in me and I in you, you will bear much fruit. Apart from me, you can do nothing. If you don't remain in me, you're like a branch that's thrown into the fire. Moving on. If you remain in me and my words remain in you, ask whatever you wish and it will be done for you. This is to my Father's glory that you bear much fruit. And I'm not going to read all of this because we're up against it time-wise. But the idea here is that this idea of fellowship is that remaining in Jesus, abiding in him, letting him be the main influence in your life. He can show us how to, this is kind of what fellowship is. It's being around people, influencing each other, spending time together in life. Because this is one of the reasons that fellowship is important, right? Because the more we spend time around other believers, it's going to positively affect the way that we live. These are everybody that you see around you, these are people that it should be good to spend time with, right? And having that fellowship is important for that reason. And Jesus told us about that idea there, that you spend time with him, you remain in him, and he will grow you. Jesus showed us prayer in John 15, verse 7. It says, if you remain in me, and we read this earlier, if you remain in me and my words remain in you, ask whatever you wish and it'll be done for you. So, if you stay connected to him, if you are growing in your relationship with Jesus, you're going to ask the things that he would want you to ask. In those cases, he will give you whatever it is that you ask. John 15, 16 says, you didn't choose me, but I chose and appointed you so that you might go and bear fruit. Fruit that will last, so that whatever you ask in my Father's name, or in my name, the Father will give you. So again, remain in him and ask it. And ask according to his will, and he'll give you what you ask for. John 17, we see a whole chapter if you read through it. And by the way, these several chapters that we're reading through or looking at here in John happen over a short period of time, leading right up to Jesus' crucifixion. And in John chapter 17, Jesus actually prayed that he and the Father would be glorified. Then he goes on and prays for his disciples and then prays for the rest of the believers. So Jesus showed an example. He prayed for all of us. And Jesus showed us how to serve in John 13, 1 through 17. I'm not going to read it. It's a long passage. But this is right during the Last Supper. And if you remember, he went around as he was teaching them some things, teaching the disciples some things as he did this. He was washing their feet. Okay? And showed us an example of serving. And the other thing is, if you look at throughout all the Gospels, Jesus served in so many other ways. I mean, do we have the same ability that he does? No. But he used, he did what he could in healing people, raising people from the dead, cleansing lepers, forgiving sins. I mean, doing whatever he could do at the time to serve others. And maybe we can't do it to the same degree. Okay, but he fed 4,000 in one case, 5,000 in another. But what we can do is do what we can, right? We have opportunities around us to serve others, and we should be following his example when it comes to that. Jesus loves selflessly. Verse 13 says that greater, in verse chapter 15 again, greater love has no one than this, to lay down one's life for one's friends. And then in John 18, 10 and 11, Chris used these verses last week. This is when Peter draws a sword and struck the high priest's servant, cutting off his ear. And Jesus commanded Peter, "Put your sword away. Shall I not drink of the cup that was given to me?" And Jesus is basically saying, listen, Peter, I need to do this, right? I have to do what I'm about to do. So, you know, put your sword away. And then John 19:28-30 says, later, knowing that everything had now been finished, so that the scripture would be fulfilled, Jesus said, "I am thirsty." A jar of wine vinegar was there, so they soaked a sponge in it, put a sponge on the stalk of the hyssop plant, and lifted it to Jesus' lips. When he received the drink, Jesus said, "It is finished." With that, he bowed his head and gave up his spirit. Up to the last moment, Jesus was in control, but he selflessly gave his life for you and I. He called us friends, right? Greater love has no one than this, to lay down one's life for his friends. See, the kind of friend that Jesus was to us is the example that he's given us that we should be towards others. I'm not saying you go out and die for somebody, okay? Not saying that would never have to happen, but the point is, you live sacrificially for those around you. You love in a way that says, you know, you matter to me. And we should be those kind of friends. Jesus is loyal, even up to the end. In Matthew 28, this was the Great Commission. It says, "And teaching them," in verse 20, "to obey everything I've commanded you, surely I'm with you to the very end of the age." See, Jesus is with us all the time, whenever we need him. Jesus gave us everything that we need, showed us everything that we need to be a good friend or a wise friend to those around us. And ultimately, it comes from just living a life that is glorifying God in all that you do, worshiping him in the way that you live, spending time with other believers, praying for other believers, serving each other. Let me just read this. So who should our friends be? John 13:34-35 says, "A new command I give you, love one another as I have loved you," which we just talked about. "So you must love one another. By this, everyone will know that you are my disciples if you love one another." The best friends that we can be are the friends that in our relationship, in our friendships, people see Jesus in our lives, see him in our relationships, in the way that we love and serve those around us. He says, by this, this is how everybody's going to know. Some of us aren't the best at just going around and talking to people about Jesus, right? My father-in-law is excellent at it. I'm not. But one of the best things I can do is just try to live a life that hopefully in some way people see Jesus in my life and the way I treat others, the way I treat, hopefully I treat my wife and family in a way that draws people to him and my friends, right? And I say that because, you know, at home is when everybody sees the worst of us. But I certainly try. And so just remember, and we're about done, you know, time-wise, we're pretty well just about out of it here. But the people that you keep around you, again, it matters. So consider the friends that you keep. Consider those that you let closest in your lives. Because you might think that you've got it all figured out, but it doesn't matter. In some way, if you got friends that you know aren't good friends to have around in your life, they are affecting you. We even heard it. There's science to back it up. So it's going to affect the way you live. So it's important. Keep people around you. Let people close to you that are all about honoring God with their lives. And I would challenge you to be that kind of a friend as well. So wise people will worship, fellowship, pray, and serve together. Walk with the wise and become wise, for a companion of fools suffers harm. So, and I don't think I said it all morning, but of course the point this week was wise up and walk wisely. Would you pray with me? God, I do thank you. I thank you for the friends that we have in our lives. And I certainly pray, God, that as we go throughout life and from day to day and we look to honor you in how we live, I pray that we would at least stop for a moment and consider those that we keep close. You know, you would help us to make wise decisions in who we spend our time with, who we let influence our lives, as we go throughout our days and weeks. Lord, I pray that if we don't have the best of friends, the wisest of friends around us, God, I pray that you would bring some people around us that would be that would encourage our growth and help us to become wiser in the way that we live. And God, it can be tough. I mean, there are different times in my life where I had to make some tough decisions. I had to give up friends and ended up you replaced them with other friends. But God, I just pray that if we have people in our lives that we need to reconsider maybe how much time we spend with them, that we'd be brave enough to make those decisions. God, we just thank you again just for the friends that we have, and help us to be the best friends that we can, that we would follow Jesus' example and love them in a sacrificial way, in a way that would encourage our friends' growth as well. We pray these things in Jesus' name. Amen.